And now, it's time for the Talk of the Northwest, the 9 to Noon Show with Greg Hughes on Highland Radio.
And a very good morning to you. 4 minutes past nine on this Friday, the 13th of October, 2023. You're very welcome along to another edition of the 9 till noon show, albeit the last one of the week, but it's a busy one. And we've got a great panel, which I'll introduce to you in a moment. But first, I want to invite you to get involved in the conversations this morning. 086 60 25000, WhatsApps and texts to that number. If you're listening outside the Republic, 00353 86 60 25000. Your telephone calls come in to us, to Donna Marie on 07491 25000, 07491 25000, and emails, of course, comments at highlandradio.com. And I'll invite you early to watch the show if you so wish on your smart TV, on the YouTube app, search Highland Radio Ireland, or on your Fire Stick, the same applies. And you can watch across your mobile devices on YouTube and Facebook, Highland Hub, Highland News and Sports. So without further ado, let's say good morning to our guest today, Mary Coyle, manager of Inidney Padraig. Good morning to you, Mary. Great to have you back on the programme.
Good morning.
It's good to see you. Also, Richard Logue, project manager in Transport London. Good morning to you, Richard.
Morning, Greg, and I'm actually here in Donegal today.
Well, it's great to have you here, and let's hope the broadband holds up. And also, Mary T. Sweeney of Aintu, the Aintu representative here in Donegal. Good morning to you, Mary T.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning, listeners.
It's good to have you with us. Right, this morning, Israel warns 1.1 million people to flee North Gaza within 24 hours. The people face a horrendous situation. Israel's telling them to go. Hamas is telling them to stay. A ground offensive is imminent. The latest escalation, of course, follows last weekend's attacks by Hamas on Israel. Over 1,000 killed, many women and children, dozens taken hostage. They are in Gaza, it seems. Much of the international community backing Israel. France has even banned pro-Palestinian demonstrations in the last couple of days. It is truly, I think we'd all agree, a horrendous situation. But Mary T, what are your views on what we are seeing? And what, if anything, is the solution?
I think, Greg, the more I read on this last night, the more I felt ignorant I was, the more I needed to read, and the more it reinforced to me the need for neutrality, that we have somebody with a neutral pedigree that can go forward to mediate, because without mediation, there's no hope. There are definitely injustices on both sides. I think the political climate is not healthy. The way the world leaders are affiliating to one side or the other, I think that's a dangerous situation. I was personally hoping that other members of the panel might have thrown in their cuppence worth and made it a bit easier for me. But I know I discussed that we had an Aintu group meeting three nights ago, and it came up in the meeting, you know, what do you do? And even among our small group, the passion and the different views that came forward. But for me, I feel that there are two things that we have to have somebody identified to immediately intercede to get a ceasefire. The really difficulty is the Israelis demand that over a million people in 24 hours must, I don't know if you saw that came out yesterday evening, that over a million people in the north of Gaza have to relocate within 24-hour period, which is today, which is the 13th of October. And the thing that struck me about the 13th of October is that this is also a feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. There is a rosary tonight on Letterkenny Main Street at 7:45, and a candlelit procession. I think prayer is the only answer with independent, and there's no independence in the world leaders. We need to identify somebody neutral that can go in and underpin this with prayer, and that's the truth of it, of what I feel.
Richard Logue, what's your take?
The whole issue with this whole Israeli-Palestinian conflict is that the solution to the conflict has been staring all of us in the face for the last 20 years. And that's the two-state solution, where we have a free and independent Palestine and a secure and free Israel. Now, as long as you've got the hardliners in the current Israeli government, although I note that Mr. Netanyahu has now formed an all-party coalition to deal with this issue, which I think is a shrewd political move on his part, but you really need to have the Oslo Peace Accords, you need to have the two-state solution implemented. And we're not seeing leadership from the Americans or the EU or anyone else on this. They seem to be happy to let the entire situation drift. And let us not understate the amount of horror that Hamas have dealt upon Israel. Live streaming a mother's murder to her children, cutting people's heads off at a music festival when young people are out there enjoying themselves. We have to say enough is enough regarding that kind of atrocity, but you can't meet atrocity with atrocity. And Israel putting a collective punishment on the residents of Gaza, and I only saw myself this morning, this order to shift a million people down to the south of Gaza.
Part of the strategy of Hamas, though, is to operate from within heavily populated cities, a city that has not far off half of the population are children. So invariably, when there are attacks, a disproportionate amount of children compared to other areas that we see are killed or maimed in it. They operate in a series of tunnels under Gaza City. So the Israelis presumably are saying that the only way they can rid Hamas, which they've committed to do so, and to limit, as they describe it, collateral damage, although some would argue they didn't care too much about that up until now, is to clear the population. But I mean, how can you have 1.1 million people moving in such a small area?
I think it's impossible. I think it's utterly impossible. And as I say, the real tragedy goes back over 25 years ago when Yitzhak Rabin was assassinated. He was the one prime minister in Israel who took the peace process entirely seriously. And we were on the verge of actually getting progress when that happened. Now, it's easy to be nostalgic for the past, but there needs to be significant leadership on this issue, because it doesn't just affect Palestinians and Israelis. It affects Jewish communities living abroad. I happen to live in a predominantly Jewish area in North London, and I happen to know that two of our local Jewish schools have had to close today because there was protests being organized outside the schools. I understand the anger, but when it starts to spill into serious security issues and concerns for people, and again, also concerns, you know, for Palestinians living abroad and, and all of that.
And anti-Muslim, so, anti-Jewish sentiment, it throws flame on the fire. Fuel on the fire.
Yeah, it resonates with me personally. I lived in England since the mid-80s, and I always remember when there were IRA atrocities. You know, I'd go into work and I was literally sent to Coventry by my colleagues, even though I had personally nothing to do with any of that. But people felt anger and they, you know, they wanted to lash out at the nearest possible person that they could lash out at. Mm. And, you know, people have a right to go about their business in peace. And as far as I'm concerned, there needs to be a very, very serious push for the two-state solution. Mm-hmm. How we get there from this complete mess we are right now, I'm afraid I can't give you an easy answer to that, but yep, that's the only answer.
And therein lies the problem. Mary Coyle, it is so unbelievable the world that we live in now, in that, you know, with raising the two oldest boys, I would always want them to avoid sort of looking at, you know, very graphic stuff, because I think you can get desensitized to that. And it was always something that I stumbled across something once on the internet and it bothered me. And I've always sort of tried to discourage them from, you know, going places where they might see that and what impact it might have on them. And yet I opened up X / Twitter last night and I was scrolling through, just simply scrolling through. And a video auto-played of, and I don't want to upset anyone listening, but this is the world that we're living at the moment. It was a father or a man running, holding a baby, a toddler, that had clearly been in an explosion, right? I never wanted to see anything like that there. But we're at the point now where, is that normalised, that this is just what happens upon your timeline on social media? Like, it used to be cats and dogs and silly stuff. And I just wonder, where is the world going? Like, I mean, people are going to be seeing that. It's like, oh, that's terrible. But you'll get people to say that, well, they did that because this was done to us and that's justified. Like, it's really scary, Mary. And I just wonder, Mary Cole, how we how we roll back from this, because there's no appetite for peace. There's the full backing for Israel to just eliminate Hamas and anyone who gets in their way.
Yeah, we discussed this morning and we had a few minutes discussion with Mary and Richard there before we came on air. And I must say, a bit like Mary there, I was, I try not to go there, a bit like yourself. I try not to go there because it's beyond your reach. There isn't a lot from here that we can do. As Mary said there, we can pray for them. But looking at that, there's it's the most densely populated area. There's over 1 million children in there. And you just think, you know, where are they going to go? Where are they? We are going to see a lot more of this on social media. The media doesn't help situations like this. And you kind of think, 24 hours, where are you going? Where are you going to take your family? They're going to go in there on with a ground invasion, and they are going to kill innocent people. And you ask people like me, you know, what side are you on? It's difficult to know what side to be on, but I'm always on the side of the innocent people that are killed. Mm-hmm. That and they're always caught in the crossfire. And it's I think they need more than prayer at the moment. I think they need a ceasefire. Again, how that is going to come about. But to see some footage like that on social media is it shouldn't be allowed. And I know they're going through that, and I know that this is
I don't need to see that. I don't need to see that to reinforce the horror. And you see, maybe Mary, more people need to take your position, whereby, you know, none of us are experts, or I certainly am not, and you're not, as by you've said yourself. And, you know, you get people that are taking positions now that are really strange. Like, you see people that are backing both Israel and Russia, you know, and I mentioned this on the show yesterday, and it shows maybe not an understanding of the geopolitical situation. But now we just encamp ourselves. You're either pro this or you're anti that. And who gets hurt in the way, even in the conversation, doesn't seem to matter anymore. Doesn't seem that that's the space that we're in now.
Exactly. That is the space that we're in. And unless you're going to take the time to read the history and how this came about, and you know, when you look at Palestine, that is it's an open air prison. And they are really between the devil and the deep blue sea, because they have no way to go anywhere. They are captured in there, and I suppose the way it is, they're there to fight because it's the only thing they can do. I just don't understand. This is going on for years. I know it's really taken over the past couple of weeks, and especially this past couple of days, it's really taken a turn for the worst. But you know, for people like us here, we just watch in horror and just wonder, who is going to step in to try and sort this out? And at the moment, there doesn't seem to be anybody.
Okay, well, I'm going to come back to this. I do have to take this first break on time. I'm going to come back to this just well, briefly. We'll talk about the international community's response to it, because I think it is worth highlighting and talking about that after this very short break. We're in the company of Richard Logue, Mary T. Sweeney and Mary Coyle. Mary T., back to you, if you don't mind. I think the events of the last while, if anyone had any doubt about the sort of hypocrisy of the world and the world leaders, in that we have a situation whereby, you know, Ursula von her name escapes me at the moment. Ursula von der Leyen, very critical of Russia, saying you can't cut off food, you can't cut off water, you can't cut off gas. It's unbelievable. You cannot do that as it relates to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. But the same sort of criticism not coming as it relates to what Israel is doing, you know, the collective punishment that I think Richard referenced. Mary T., you know, the hypocrisy of the international community, really, and we all have a role to play in that, I suppose, because we are complicit in electing these people for the most part. It is something worthy of discussion, I think, isn't it? Because they are speaking on our behalf, these leaders at times, or they believe they are.
Well, I think it didn't help seeing Antony Blinken come out yesterday and standing saying, you know, we will support Israel no matter what happens. It's the no matter what happens. like that's only adding, as you say, fuel to the fire. There's no sense of being conciliatory or trying to establish a ceasefire to engage dialogue. Dialogue's what's needed. In my own discussion with the team, somebody said, but you're, no one person's going to fix it. I said, remind us what John Hume did. Remind us what Nelson Mandela did. One person supported can do an awful lot of good. Because the reality is, without that, we have no hope for ever regaining peace. That is what has escalated peace in every conflict situation. And going back to blame the division and the English involvement, and all, there's no point at this day. Today, we need to move forward. Mm-hmm. We need to get the United Nations, they should be respected. Mm-hmm. And the reality is Israel shouldn't be telling them that they also have to get out within 24 hours.
Yeah. And I think
that should not be happening.
Just in relation to the situation, that the Palestinians would say that their oppression and their imprisonment is ongoing. You know, it's this is not necessarily as a response to one individual situation. Richard, what have you reflected on looking at the international leadership response to this?
I think, as Mary has said, there's a certain amount of double standards. On one hand, the pressure is being put on, and rightly so, on Russia regarding the whole issue of the Ukrainian war. But until you actually get a figure, as Mary's mentioned, like a John Hume or a Nelson Mandela, from inside both the Israeli and the Palestinian side, then we're not going to see any change. But we should not be applying double standards. You know, I am broadly supportive of Israel, but I am not supportive of what this government in Israel is trying to do with collective punishments. And all they're going to do is that's going to breed up a whole new generation of terrorism. It didn't work for the British in Northern Ireland. The greatest recruiting sergeant for the IRA was, in my view, the Bloody Sunday killings. So, yeah, if you take a longer term view of these things, how do you actually build peace and reconciliation? Well, you don't build peace and reconciliation by telling a million people to go inside a very small landlocked piece or a shut off piece of territory like Gaza and tell them to go down to the south of the territory. Mm. I feel that there have been fundamental issues. I think my own view is Hamas are out there to provoke Israel, knowing that Israel will then react. And it suits them that Israel will react completely to all this.
Yes, of course. And some would say that has been counterintuitive from Hamas because it's given Israel effectively an international free rein. But, you know, obviously the Hamas and the people they represent would say that they were antagonized into their actions, as horrendous as they were, from the ongoing, like you say you're broadly supportive of Israel. Does that mean you've been broadly supportive of how they've treated the millions of people in the Gaza Strip and Palestine more widely? And, you know,
no.
Okay, so
Let me be very clear. I'm very keen on Israel's right to exist in a peaceful coexistence with the Palestinians and make sure the Palestinians have their right to statehood, which they so richly deserve. But what I do object to is when Hamas are going in there and literally butchering people. Mm-hmm. What justification is there for that? There's none. None whatsoever. Two Irish citizens killed out there in true sheer butchery. Mm-hmm.
But you'd be aware, of course, there is no justification for that. But 91 children were killed in the short couple of days before that encroachment into Israel. And as I say, I find all of it so horrendous that I would not even be talking or thinking about it probably if I wasn't doing this job. But, you know, 91, just because we didn't see the videos and we weren't fed it on BBC and Sky News, it doesn't mean that in the days leading up to that encroachment that 91 babies and children died at the hands of Israel.
Exactly, Greg, and that is not forgivable. It's not justifiable. Mm. It's not justifiable for Israel to enforce collective punishment on Gaza, cutting them off like that. All Israel is going to do is build up a whole new generation of people who are determined to fight them tooth and nail. What kind of common sense can be brought to the whole Likud government, outlet government out there. In my private view, my own view is that the current government of Israel, a bunch of extremists.
Mm-hmm.
We need the moderate voices in Israel to stand up for against this nonsense.
Yeah, it seems though, Mary Coyle, and lastly on this, and I mean, it's almost terrible to move on given the scale of it. The bottom line is that what is the solution? It seems at this point that the solution is that an Israel are being backed by the international community to go in and wipe out Hamas and whoever gets in their way and, clear the place out.
And really, is that the answer? Think of the amount of people that is going to be killed while they're doing that. And again, as Mary said earlier on, I think it's dialogue. I do think world leaders need to get involved here. And it has to come to some kind of ceasefire and some kind of peace there that they can live, not so much together, because I don't think we're ever going to see that, but that they can live without imprisonment, and that they have some sort of life after this. Although I think what's going to happen in the next couple of days are going to be absolutely horrendous.
I mean, let's have the Gaza Strip and the Gaza City, in terms of previous assaults on it, they've got no means to rebuild. So you've got hundreds of thousands of people living in houses that they simply did not have the resources or the money or the equipment to rebuild. And now the city has been levelled again, and it is being levelled again. And where are they going to go? Where are they going to go? They can't go back and rebuild. So where do they go?
But sure, if they keep going, Greg, there's going to be very little to live there if they keep going the way they are, at the rate of people. Once they're finished with this land invasion, they're going to kill so many people doing this. And again, it's very hard to take sides. It's very hard to see the way forward for us ordinary people living on the ground. But it is the people in power that need to sit down and try and find a way forward here.
Yeah, and I think it's really important.
One thing I would have to add there is that people shouldn't be complacent and think this is going to stay limited to that region. The American government are all on high alert this morning about the possibility of escalations around the world and this reverberating out. And you have to ask yourself, follow the money. Where there's war, there's always money created.
Yeah, of course.
And I think we need to look very carefully at it. Yeah. I was going to say, we need to look very carefully at what Iran is doing, because Iran is one of the key funders of the Hamas movement as well. And they would have the wherewithal to be able to, drop people into Israel's territory. And I don't think enough emphasis has been looked at about what they're doing.
If there's not a conscious effort to intervene here at this early stage, then you're looking at the escalation of violence, and I wouldn't think it would be suggested that it's going to be limited to the region of Gaza and Israel.
And I would anticipate quite an increase, significant increase in terrorist attacks around the world over the next year or so. We're going to be returning to those days again, there's no doubt about that. Okay, we're going to move or return to domestic issues, though, such as the scale of this. We can't ignore it. It is domestic to an extent as well, of course, after we take a break. More from our guests. Caller says there's no justification for bombing and slaughtering innocent men, women and children. If Israel want to fight Hamas, let them. Find another way to get to them. They have a big enough and strong enough army to be able to do so. But Hamas, part of their strategy is to intertwine themselves in communities and under communities and what have you. Such is the nature of that war. I was leaving the children to school this morning and saw a car in front of me with a massive Palestinian flag. I mean, I think it's not appropriate here in Bunkrana. If I was to put a Russian flag on my car, all hell would break loose. We cannot be seen to be taking sides in this horrendous situation, which is an interesting comment. I believe that, like the Ukraine, Hamas hide their weapons, stashes and troops in apartment blocks, schools and hospitals. So when you see these buildings being hit in Ukraine and Palestine, it's because the Ukraine and Hamas government want them to be hit to gain favour and support for more war. Good morning, Greg. $4 billion for Ukraine, which could have went to making pensioners and social welfare recipients the €20 to give them the €20 that they needed. And another, I don't I don't want people. I don't think people realise this is possibly the start of World War III. There are two wars ongoing. Our government aren't looking for peace. Well, listen, I mean, what? How do you define world war? The West is at war with Russia in Ukraine. I mean, you can't suggest otherwise. Now, it's not nuclear, and it's being operated in a different way. But is that a world war? I don't know. How do you determine that in this day and age with how wars are fought, be they cyber or drones or what have you? Right, back home, Budget 24, tax cuts, increases in social welfare, more one-off payments, free school books, more money for farmers and money being put away for a rainy day. The opposition, for the most part, say it was a missed opportunity and their concerns over spending in health and other key areas. So overall, I'll start with you this time, Mary Coyle, if that's okay. How would you rate Budget 24?
Some of Budget 24, I suppose, there are people that are going to gain from Budget 24, but I think more people are not going to gain from it. There's not enough in there for the working class families. I'm looking at the minimum wage there. I was doing a bit of calculation this morning. Anybody on part-time work is going to come out with €27 more. And then you have to deduct from that the increase in PRSI. I don't think
minimum wage increases are great because it's businesses that pay for it and the government get more tax. It's a fantastic initiative if you're in government, isn't it?
It is. So you're taking away in one hand and you're giving in one hand and you're taking away in another, and that just seems to be a lot of what this budget is about. I think definitely not enough done with regards to housing. I suppose we submitted a submission there for the draft Donegal development plan. And looking at the statistics they had for housing here in the Gidor area, it's not a fraction of what's needed. Not an absolute fraction. So they've definitely not done enough with regards to housing. And our health system is broken, and I don't think they've done enough to fix our health system.
Well, it's strange in that because you have we had Piers Doherty, Sinn Féin's finance spokesperson, coming out to bat for Stephen Donnelly in the Dáil, which is a strange state of affairs, saying that the minister had been thrown under the bus. That's that's the political state we're in now.
Yeah, and I did hear that, you know, and we're going to discuss Letterkenny General Hospital later on in the show. But I think our health system is broken, and it needs a lot to fix our health system. Going back to the budget, and again, I don't think there's enough done for transport in rural areas. I think they've really just touched on that, and I would love to see how they intend to expand the transport situation in Donegal. I don't think they've definitely done enough with regards to transport. And again, when you look at the energy costs and how they are soaring, I know on a personal level myself, I got a bill last 2 weeks ago for electricity at €500, wow, just short of €500 for my own home. And we work all day. So I just don't understand how people on minimum wage or how people that are getting the dole, how they are managing to live.
And an awful lot of the averages, Mary, that we hear and how the budget is framed nationally is based on, you know, your average income being 40 or 50 grand a year and living in a city, perhaps. You know what I mean? Because that's where the majority of people are. That's perhaps what the average wage is. But it doesn't talk to the average wage in Donegal being much lower than that, 27, 28, 29, 30,000 euro. And you have to have a car. You know, to live around here, if you want, you have to have a car. There is no alternative. Now, some people may successfully be able to tot about on a scooter or a bike. That's fine. But the majority of people, you have to have a car. Mary T. Sweeney, I'll come to you next, if that's okay. What's your review of the budget? I mean, there's some good stuff in there.
There's some elements. But listen to me. I have to agree with what Mary's saying there, that our priorities is I'm here to look after Donegal and represent Donegal. And where was the Mica allocation for Donegal? Where was the homes for Donegal? The reality is it's a disgrace, and I'm not represented in Dublin. and Dublin has not represented the people of Donegal. They're playing with figures. They're consistently playing with figures. And they're, as she said, taken in one hand, given out on the other. It's manipulation of figures, really, in my opinion. Where is the real support for people caring and the hope for people? Means tested. It's saving billions in the economy every year. And they're still treating them like second-class citizens, the people that are carers in the home. That's the reality of it. Five guards I spoke to recently, all looking to get out as soon as they can get out. Who's addressing that issue? The hospital is in crisis. The Gardaí are in crisis. Education is going to be in crisis. What are we doing about it? We're playing politics. We're playing with figures. It's not good enough. We need proper representation. And being honest, we need accountability. The word accountability has to be lodged into Irish politics and used, whether it's to deal with RTE or the health service or whatever. You know, will RTE get the bailout when our hospital needs it? Our staff are in crisis. Agency staff, I suppose we're going to talk about that shortly. Listen to me. No, I'm not impressed with the budget. There's no point in me saying I am. Not impressed. We need a road from here to Galway to take our patients down the road, and the road's not even been upgraded and two lorries can't pass.
Well, we don't even have a bus. We don't even have a bus to take our patients to Galway, let alone a road at this point. Yeah. But the public appetite, it seemed to be, according to polls, was an investment in services. You know, we know the CDNT issues here. We know the issues in terms of childcare. We know the issues in terms of health. You know, putting money back in people's pockets that all parties were using. You know, Sinn Féin, we're going to put a week's rent or a month's rent back in people's pockets. But a month's rent in your pocket is grand. But, you know, you'd be spending 36 hours rent-free down in the ED in Letterkenny University Hospital. That's what people really want to see addressed, isn't it, Mary T? Things like that.
People really want to be able to turn on the button when it's cold, especially our elderly. And they cannot afford to turn on the heating. They're not allowed to light fires. They're not allowed to burn their turf. People need to have heat. We need to have the basic commodities to have a sustainable life of some quality and not be afraid for every penny you spend. Mm-hmm. It's just, you know, we've got to look after our elderly. We're not looking after. We're not heating the homes. We're increasing the price of oil in a rural economy, in a rural country, the price of fuel, the price of travel for your petrol, your diesel. You know, we're the dearest country for electricity. Where are they going and billions being made of it?
Okay, Richard, that being said,
I'm not impressed.
In fairness, now that these, it just so happens this panel is assembled post-budget, okay? But, you know, in fairness to the government, they would say there is a lot of money there for farmers. There is, it is putting money back in an awful lot of people's pockets. The majority of workers and those on benefits or social welfare, or however anyone wants to phrase it, there's a bit of tax breaks there for renters and for landlords as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's not bad,
is it? Tax
breaks
for renters. And, the tax breaks obviously are very welcome. But I've always had a bit of a kind of a saying.
Help me out here, one of you as well.
Irish politicians and Donegal. And basically, you know, Donegal is a faraway place of which we know little. And Mary mentioned at the outset there about lack of provision for MICA, for instance. I've just been looking at, I've been reading Michael McGrath's speech verbatim directly off the Irish Times. And I was two things I was looking out for. One was MICA, didn't see it. The other thing I was looking out for was things like tax relief for things like basic stuff like insulation. If homes are properly insulated, you don't spend as much money on electricity. I'm about to buy a house myself here in Donegal, and the first thing I'm going to have to spend a bit of money on is basically properly insulating the house, because the BER rating is just ridiculous. So, you know, it's simple stuff that can keep tax bills down. The biggest spending on this particular budget is they want to establish a sovereign wealth fund, which they're looking to put 100 billion euro into. And that is great, but there are a major crisis in the health service. I note today, for instance, I don't know if you saw it, where they've announced that the maximum recruitment age for Gardaí has now gone up to 50 and that they're going to adjust the fitness tests accordingly. That strikes me that they're struggling to recruit guards. And perhaps if they pick up a proper wage, it might help as well.
Yeah, but in terms of that, I mean, it makes a lot of sense to put the money away, though, because the argument being that, you know, you can't really plan capital projects. You know, Richard, you're a big advocate of that, because...
And there is a smaller fund. You're right there, Greg. Now, there is a smaller fund of $13 billion, which has been put aside to allow capital expenditure on infrastructural projects, you know, for the proverbial rainy day. Because we've had so many projects, you know, when we had the 2008 crash, several infrastructural projects were canned by the government, never to see the light of day again. So that is important. Mm. But I think the Sovereign Wealth Fund also needs to look at issues that we have with our woeful underinvestment in the health service, our woeful underinvestment, by the way, in the Guards and in the Defence Forces. Mm. And don't get me started in the fact that we still rely on the RAF 100 years after our independence for some of our defence issues. You know, we really need to... I was hoping in this budget, given that it's possibly the last budget before the next general election, that there would have been some much more significant improvements, particularly in the areas of housing. Michael McGrath said in his speech, I'm pleased to say we built 7,500 social housing last year. That's great. We actually need 70,000. You know, we need a significant...
They have to start somewhere. They're ramping it up, they would say. But Mary Coyle, I don't know, maybe it's because of the job that I do here. But, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 euro for a lot of people, of course it's going to make a difference. But, you know, in terms of getting supports for families with children with additional needs, you know, respite care, older people... like a lady we were speaking to yesterday who can't get the fuel allowance because her outgoings are not included. Any assets she has are in the assessment. Older people, 89 years of age yesterday, 36 hours sitting in the ED. Like, I would be sitting here waving government flags if that stuff, not literally, but you know what I mean, if that was the stuff that we could say, right, carers, as Mary T. Sweeney pointed out, you know, ringing up desperate, they were hoping for something in this budget and in tears because there's nothing there for them. You know, that's the real people of this country to me, our older people, our more vulnerable people, our children that need the supports in a timely fashion. And when that stuff is absent, I find it hard to get excited.
Yeah, and I agree totally. I suppose we work on the ground here, the community and voluntary sector, and you see it all. You actually go out to see it all. We deliver meals to the elderly. So you go out and you hear about the worry they have that they don't have enough money for fuel. The houses are not warm. You see the family. We have spoken about this so many times, Greg, that the number of food packages that we deliver now have soared within the past couple of years. And you kind of think, you know, that something needs to be done for the ordinary people on the ground. And this budget hasn't done that. It's not done enough to help the ordinary people. Giving people 15, 20 euro extra per week, that's not going to make a difference. Not when your electricity bill is so high. Not when you have to keep a car on the road because there's no public transport as such in areas like this. And you kind of look at the families, especially those families that fall into the bracket of they're earning that wee bit more that they don't have a medical card, but yet they don't have enough money to have medical insurance. So they're falling into that gap in there. And those people are in crisis because they're waiting for years, and it is years, for appointment because they can't pay, they don't have the money to pay private insurance, and yet they don't have a medical care. So I'm all for those people that are falling between the gaps, and you see it more and more, that is the people that we need to focus on.
And for a conversation like this as well, I just want to point out, if any of you can think of a situation where there's a debate like this whereby there will be a representative from government parties that will come on and sort of counterpoints like what Mary is saying, what Mary T is saying, what Richard is saying. It doesn't really happen in this country. You do try to do it. You might get, if you're lucky, you might get Eoghan O'Brien and the housing minister onto a show, and they'll be able to bait the heads of stuff. But when it gets down to actually real people's stories, it's very difficult to set up a panel or have a conversation whereby someone will advocate, because often a government representative or a local representative, they're dealing with the people that you're dealing with, Mary Coyle, and they will agree with you, and they will say, yes, we need this government to do more. So the reason I wanted to point that out is because someone might perceive this conversation, right, as being sort of anti-government. But in my view, it's not, because it's very difficult. I'm trying to strike a balance or get a balance, but we're talking about real people, real situation. You deal with the Mary. You get representations from the Mary T, and you obviously, Richard, would know them, and you understand that as well. So it's difficult, and I would much prefer if we were able to sort of have someone on from government defending these decisions, but that doesn't really exist in this country when we start talking about real people's lives to some extent, and it'll probably be the same when there's a change of government. Mary T, do you want a quick word just before we take a break and move on to our last topic?
One thing that summed it up for me is we had our Ardèche at the weekend in Dublin, and there's a new member. He's a member of the Military Forces of Ireland in the Irish Army, and he asked one of the officers for any comment or feedback for the meeting, and he gave him a boot, and the boot was actually, the sole was coming off it. This is one of our Irish Army officers, sent the boot to the meeting and said, tell the people that's the representation this government's giving our Irish Defence Forces. That said a lot to me.
Good enough. Not good enough, is it?
Not good enough.
Okay, back with more from our guests in our final segment after the break. We're in the company of Richard Logue, Mary T. Sweeney and Mary Coyle. I'll stay with you, Mary T. Sweeney, as you were the last contributor just before the break there. 78 Donegal GPs have written to the Health Minister calling for an outside review of the operation of the Letterkenny University Hospital's ED. They're threatening to lead people onto the streets if action isn't taken. Do you think this will work?
I think that is going to take a collective response to have any impact. And indeed, if our locally elected ministers and senators and representatives don't realise what they're ignoring at peril of the people, there's something like, is it 40,000 annually use the service between Letterkenny and Sligo? It's concerning that it's taking the doctors. We did get on the street in the cold weather of winter. We've started the campaign. We intend to write to those doctors to try and join forces, because it will take the community to stop this, to address it, and to get any sort of realistic change in management and in resources, because it'll take a national strategy. This is not selective just to Letterkenny. This is not just a localised problem for us. This is a national problem, and this is something that has not been addressed at all. It's, we have to put our hands up and say, we are failing. This service is not running efficiently, effectively. Mm. One of the reports from Aintu, 500,000 adverse incidents in the last 5 years. 500,000, and many of those have led to death. I have the facts and figures. It's not about scaremongering the people. Mm-hmm. It was questions put in through Aintu, and it's absolutely frightening.
Yeah, and you're talking about a universal response to it, but there are particular challenges in Letterkenny University Hospital. We have the slowest turnaround times and response times for ambulances. We have a huge amount of people that leave before they receive treatment. We operate in a different way whereby everyone, be it a miscarriage, cancer, goes through the ED, sick children all go through the ED. There are unique challenges, are there not, that need addressing, at least in the short term, at Letterkenny University Hospital. And that doesn't take away to your wider point about a general overhaul of the health service, but there are specific concerns relating to Letterkenny University Hospital. And just briefly, because I want to bring the other two in, our other two guests before 10.
One of the most constructive pieces of advice came from the ambulance staff to me in the early days of the campaigning, and that was that we desperately need a bank of sterile trolleys at the hospital, because they have to stand and wait for their trolley before that ambulance is released. Mm. An ambulance can sit for 24 hours and longer with one patient because they're waiting to get in, okay, to take the patient off the trolley and hand them over.
Mary Coyle,
do we need the nurses of the calibre, or do we need nursing, a lower profile nurse to mind the patient until they are taken into administration.
Understood.
That ambulance should be released and let back out on the road again.
Mary Cole, sorry to leave you just a minute on such an important subject.
Yeah, and I'm so happy that that letter went in from the GPs. And yes, they need the community to back them up. We deal with cancer patients here. Donegal Cancer Flights and Services is based here in Enid Na Pádraig. I know of cancer patients that were out there, went out there on palliative care and sat for 14 hours for treatment, sat for 14 hours through A&E, doesn't even begin to talk about the mess that is out there. It is unbelievable. There are people, as you said, I know a relation of my own that actually walked out of the hospital because he had sat for nearly 24 hours and thought, what am I doing here? I'd be better off at home in my bed.
And unfortunately, I spoke to a cancer patient who, and it may or may not be the same person, who also did that and ended up going back 4 hours later in an ambulance. And again, I'm sorry, Mary, we are going to be covering the hospital story in much greater detail into the future. But Richard, just the last comment to you, if that's okay, please.
Yeah, very briefly. And one fact that's really stood out, and I'm really frightened by it. August, in the middle of the summer, there was at one point no ambulances available in the whole of Donegal, Sligo and Leitrim because they were waiting for drop-offs at Letterkenny University Hospital. God knows what it's going to be like in the winter.
Well, that's what the GP said.
One thing, just to mention, the escalation of suicides in this county. What's
absolutely.
It's humbling. We need something immediate.
Again, that is actually such an important issue. We are going to dedicate quite a bit of a programme, if not a whole programme, to that, because it is catastrophic what's happening at the moment.
Unbelievable.
Mary T. Sweeney, as always, it's a pleasure having you on the programme. Thank you very much indeed. I wish you had 2 hours. Richard Logue, thank you also. It's nice to be speaking to you and you in Donegal. Take care of yourself.
In Donegal, exactly.
Yeah, and last but certainly not least, Mary Cole, manager of Enid Na Pádraig. Thank you very much for your involvement in the programme. I really do appreciate it. And have a wonderful day and weekend.
Thank you very much.
Okay, we'll be back with more after the news and obituary notices. Stay right where you are.